trying to be less Buddhist even than last time. And I was reminded this morning of the phrase, when you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. Especially in relation to this evening's talk. The only trouble is, every time I try and kill the Buddha, he kind of comes. I kill him here and he comes back over there, or he comes over here. Because tonight's talk is about seeing, inquiry, vipassana. And really, in this seeing, there is no room for authority, no room for being told what to do. Because the essence of the path is existential inquiry. Is inquiry into what really is going on with our one precious life, as the poet said. What really is going on with this life in this moment? In this very moment. Because this very moment is the only place that we can know our life. So, key to the whole teaching is inquiry. It's not a teaching about belief, Messiah, or worship. It's inquiry. And in this course, what we've been doing, yeah. In the Hakira is the word, I think. In this course, what we've been doing up to now in the roadmap that was suggested by the man is developing a certain degree of calmness and steadiness, a certain degree of quietness, and not escaping. Not escaping into usual habits of comfort and of restlessness and of running and doing and fixing things. The kind of Shabbat. So we've been learning this so far in the course. We've been sitting here, just sitting. Like a chicken, as I said, on the eggs. But developing, hopefully, tools of steadiness. Tools that now we can begin to use for seeing, inquiry. Inquiry, vipassana. Vipassana means to see inside. To see through. And I'm told by Pali scholars that the word, the element vi in here is actually to see between things, to see differences, to be able to separate things from each other. So it's clarity we're talking about, because we can't deeply solve our problems in one big, messy, dark cloud, which we often live in. We can solve our problems by clarity of what they're really made of. That's vipassana. So, firstly, I want to talk about inquiry into what? Into what? And in the group today, many of us expressed in different languages and experiences, expressed a kind of duality. Everything's fine, but I've got a problem. I would be so peaceful and calm, but I've got a problem. Pain in the back, tiredness, restlessness, constant thoughts about something that's bugging me, I have to solve a problem that's waiting for me out there. Everything would be fine if it wasn't for that. And the assumption is that what we're doing here is kind of creating a silent, calm space, and everything else keeps coming in and disturbing us. No, that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here is meeting our life as it expresses itself, with full honesty, completely honest to what we really are experiencing in this minute. Difficulties arise, and they're often very subtle, very delicate. For example, nothing's happening. I'm just sitting here and nothing's happening. I don't experience very much. I'm rather bored, a little bit bored. There's nothing going on. So you feel, well, something's wrong. It's supposed to happen. The world's supposed to be shaking. There's supposed to be spiritual fireworks. Zikuke dinur. Where are they? Nothing is happening is a statement about your experience. So, that's the truth. The truth is, subjectively, my experience is, nothing is happening. Okay. Why isn't that a legitimate subject or experience for insight? We see it as a problem. Why isn't it just like anything else? Why is nothing happening worse than ecstasy? Why? Nothing happening is the legitimate experience that life is bringing us right now. It is the raw material, the chomer gelim, of this present experience, present moment, a gift of life. So, if even nothing happening is a good subject for inquiry, then certainly everything else is a good subject for inquiry. In other words, everything is a subject for inquiry. Because it's the way our life expresses itself to us in this minute right now. I think we ought to be careful about the tendency to develop theory about what's good in our spiritual life. Because the tendency for splitting, the hafrada, making split between the good and the bad, is so deep in the human soul, and in a way so destructive. I think that Rakefet talked a bit about this yesterday, and I just read a book, an interesting book by Nachi Alon and Chaim Omer, about the tendency for us to create demons. That it's so much easier to make a demon out of a problem than to actually see that that life just brings us now this, now that, now difficult, now easy, now pleasant, now unpleasant. That's it. But we tend to make a split and say, Magiali, I deserve the good is good, and the bad is out there, and I have to get rid of it, and the bad can be anything. It can be my parents, what my parents did to me, it can be my neighbor, it can be the can be anything, and then we build a separation, and then we make a theory out of it, and then the good becomes paradise, and the bad becomes devils, and we need to keep fighting them. So we keep fighting ourselves, actually, because they're in us. So we fight ourselves and we fight the problem that is I'm struggling with, the pain, it becomes a demon, the issue, the struggle, the mental memory of something becomes a demon. So we split everything. We have to put it back together and say, it's just this, and now it's that. It's pleasant experience, now it's an unpleasant experience. It's like this, and now that. So that's what it is that we inquire into. That's material. That's the raw material. And more than that, this constant, the content that arises, if we look carefully, it's our biography. It is our life story. It may seem it's not. Like a pain in the back, well, it's just, you know, maybe because I'm not sitting properly, or I need to ask again Simi and Yonatan to help me with my posture. No. If we look carefully enough, the pain in the back is a story. It's a story. It's something about us. It's a tension. It's carrying something. It's a message. It's a whatever we like. It's a place where something is remembered or calling us. A pain, a stress. I mean, so many times I've seen in retreats people coming with an experience of contraction, hitkatsut, at a certain place in the body. For example, the breath isn't flowing, so it's a contraction, it's a something closed, and struggling with it, and all of a sudden, by paying attention, it opens, and when it opens, an understanding comes, and maybe some tears, something deeper is underneath, and it's maybe fear, and maybe worry, or insecurity, and it comes out and is released. But it's held inside the body in this form of contraction. So all the experiences that we have are really holding in them something about our life, our biography, our story, our history, our layers of experiences of conditioning, hatnaya, in layers. It makes everything meaningful, and everything we experience is good subject for vipassana. Nothing need to be left out. Anything that comes up is good enough as a story of our life. Anything. One of the things that happen to us in the retreat very often is after a few days of sitting quietly, difficulty does come up. And it is a question to many of us. Well, why is it that I'm doing what the teachers say? I'm sitting, breathing, quietly, calm. Why is it so difficult? Why does pain come out all the time? Why does tiredness come out? Why does restlessness come out? Why is it that I'm not going on a uphill, steady walk to joy and bliss and peace and ecstasy? Isn't that what spirituality is all about? And I think many of us really are rather, and we get feeling of failure sometimes, or disappointment, and it should be something else, and we feel, it doesn't mean that it happens to everybody. Sometimes, indeed, people, that's their experience. But it's usually only one retreat, and the next retreat, boom. They're back to pain in the back, and stress, and restlessness. One retreat, exceptional retreat, we can allow pure joy. After that, no way. um, Now, it's a real question, and I think it's we need to understand a little bit about this, that it's such a universal experience that if we look carefully, the first kind of experiences that come up for us tend to be painful. When we sit quietly, what tends to come up for us is difficulty. And it tends to be the things that come up first. And if we keep practicing, we find that layers of difficulty peel off. But that does tend to be our first experience. And I think that the reason is that life is a struggle. The first noble truth of the Buddha is life, our experience of life is a struggle, because in order to be alive, in order to stay alive, we have to constantly work. We need to eat 3 times a day, we need to make sure we're not sick, we need to make sure we run away from danger, it's constant work. And it starts at the age of more or less 6 months old. We are constantly busy to make sure that we survive. And all of that leaves traces. All of that leaves signs, and often scars. Scars are talakot. The wounds and the difficulties of life, it's not exactly our fault, but we're born into samsara. We're born into a life which is a struggle. A life just to stay alive. And it's not that life is full of suffering, it's that our experience of life, our experience of life it's not a joke, shall we say. It's no joke. Although you can laugh at it after a while, but it's a struggle. You see it in a small baby. My granddaughter is now reaching the age when she is learning that she can't get what she wants all the time, 24 hours. And the tears are beginning. She was so blissfully joyful and happy until the age of what you call the terrible two. And now she's learning that it's just impossible. It's not even a whole army, like the whole, I don't know what, all the mothers in Israel would never supply her with every possible want that she has to get it just like that. So I mean, the tears are inevitable. We have no choice. Life is a struggle. And that's the first noble truth. And when we look inside ourselves, we tend the first thing, not always, but it tends to be that when we sit quietly, like a still pool, then we begin to see the mud under the water, the box. It tends to be that comes up first, the difficulty. And they often come up in retreats wearing the clothes of restlessness. Isheket, wearing the clothes of anger, resistance. I don't like this. The food is terrible. The retreat is awful. The teachers are crazy. They can't bear this stuff that I'm hearing all the time. This place is cold or hot or small or big or Israel or China or whatever it's got to be. I need now the best coffee that I can get in Tel Aviv Cafe Aroma. I can't bear it anymore. I must have this, I must have that, I must have a more comfortable bed, I must have a room on my own, air conditioned, I got to have, da 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 da. I, I, or all kinds of things, or of course pain in the body, pain in the heart has come up, it's there, or confusions, cloudiness, don't know where I am in all of this, blank out, too confusing, too difficult, don't know where, don't know what's going on, switching off. And several people report this, report in this retreat, tendency of the mind to switch off. I'm sitting here and I'm gone. Switch off. Or clouds. So these phenomena are the phenomena of meeting, in a way, our biography, our story. Actually, there's an interesting image. I used the image in my other talk of fire. And there's an image in the tradition. I also use the word coolness as a metaphor for calming down, steadying, and awakening. And there's an interesting metaphor about the two together. What happens if you drop cool water on a hot burning fire? The first thing that happens is, right? And that is the reactions that we have, the pains and the difficulties and the resistance and the isheket. All of that is the coolness of meditation meeting the fire of our stories. And if we keep dropping drops, it eventually cools down, the gets less and less and less and less because the fire cools down. It's just an image that is nice image. But there is something that happens, not in life, but in the retreat situation, which is a bit of a kind of sirachatz, a pressure cooker, that generates difficulty and problems. And now we're entering the stage of practice of vipassana, when we begin to explore the tools now of solving the problems, of looking at the problems, rather than just saying, I got a problem, I can't sit. No longer is it a problem. Now these things become opportunities. They become the places for us to work. They become subjects for vipassana. So what is vipassana? Vipassana, as I say, is seeing inside, seeing clearly, seeing through, seeing, differentiating between things. The first thing about vipassana is ownership of our own experience. The first thing that we need to understand about vipassana is it's in here. It's our experience. We take, often called take responsibility, but I'm not sure I like that language very much, because it's like, I need to take responsibility of my problems, because it's a bit heavy. It's more like, I acknowledge that the issues are in here. It's a very important step, because all of us know, in this world, I think, little Napoleons. All of us have met them. Army officers, friends and relations, family members, that because they don't see the fear and insecurity in themselves, they just boss everybody around, become big bullies. And we all know, it's just an example I'm bringing to show, if we don't take responsibility for what's inside us, for example, our fear, we're going to project it everywhere in the world, and we're going to say, I haven't got fear, it's them that's making me afraid. It's them. It's the enemy. Or it's my parents that made me all this suffering. Or it's the Palestinians that are making me not joyful in my life and are always making me afraid. Or it's this, or it's that, or it's those, or it's always somewhere else. And we never then take ownership of what's really going on. And as soon as, and I've also seen this, as soon as the person stops projecting their issues into their life and blaming others and so on, begin to say, yeah, it's in me, maybe for a short time the tears will flow, but there is the release, there is the first step in becoming, in releasing from the fear or the anger or the stress or the... So it's first part of Vipassana to say, it's here, the anger or whatever it is, the experience, the restlessness, the stress, the difficulty, the difficult memories. We, in our memory, we blame everybody. Our memory is a wonderful, safe place where we can blame everybody. Because we just sit there and, oh, it's, they did this to me, and they did this to me, and they did that to me. So memory is a wonderful place where we throw shit on everything and everybody. We forget that the memory is right here. And it's in us. So, the first part of Vipassana is to say, where exactly is the phenomena, or is the thing? It is in me, and I am with it. The second step or aspect of Vipassana is to identify things. Is lezahot, to identify, to see clearly what it is that's happening. That's the V in Vipassana, to see, to identify. We may, for example, feel this contraction in our body, stress. Inner quietness, inner insight, maybe we begin to see that it's fear, or it's worry, or it's insecurity. If we can hold that observation clearly in us, we identify it. We identify it's okay, it's fear. Okay, I see you. I see you. Or it can be experiences are clouds, our cloudiness, where everything is mixed up together. We're not sure what it is, just we're not very happy, or we're not very quiet. We don't know quite what it is. Or there is just resistance, negativity. We are angry. We don't see the anger. We just see the resistance, the negativity. This, you know, that kind of movement. And we don't see it clearly that it's anger. Vipassana, based on the work we've been doing up to now, which is steadiness and observation, and quiet observation, Vipassana says, no, look at it clearly and see what it is, what is exactly coming up for us. So, for example, judgment, shiputiyut, judgment, criticism of ourselves or of others. It's often got so many clothes on, we don't notice what it is really. It's just a general feeling of, I'm no good. Judgment of self. Vipassana says, no, it's not enough. Just a general feeling of being down. Pull it out of the big mess. Okay? From the big mess. Pull it out and clearly identify, okay, it's judgment. For example, I'm walking to the food and I feel my plate and something's sort of not right. if we look carefully, you may see I'm judging myself because I'm eating too much. Something like that. If we see it clearly as judgment, self-judgment, it's part of the battle. Half the work is done. We see, oh, judgment comes up. Oh, fear comes. Oh, anger comes. Oh, joy. This is called joy. Ah, okay, joy. Great. Hello. How are you, joy? Nice to meet you. It's kind of, oh, to clearly identify everything as it comes. And that's 50% of our solving our problems, is simply to identify them as they come up. Then when we identify them, if we go a little bit closer, we become a little bit more intimate with the experience of the anger, the judgment, or whatever it is that's coming up for us. If we go a little closer, we notice something very interesting. Every phenomena is made up of other phenomena. Everything that we say, this is a pain in my knee, or in my back, or in my heart, or in life, if we look carefully, it is made up of all kinds of components, of pieces, of elements. And if we can take this thing to pieces, again, vipassana, cutting through, cutting the experience into its parts, it's a way of freeing ourselves from the control of this thing, which we made into a demon, this demon called anger, pain in the back, whatever it is. I remember a personal example. I used to be very, very affected many years ago by fear of audience, fear of pachad kahal, okay? Fear of speaking like I am now. Actually, I'm not afraid now of you, especially of you. But some years ago, if I would have been sitting here like I am now, my stomach would have been contracted. I would have been sweating. I would have been, not able to speak. I would have been unable to hold a silence even for 1 second because of fear. It was a disastrous experience for me. And I was a lecturer at university. And it was extremely difficult for me to be a lecturer at university. Total nightmare, actually. And I learnt the skills of vipassana at that time. And what I would do is go into the class like 5 minutes before the students came. Now, as soon as I went into the class, the whole thing came up. And it was just, I just had to see the desks of the people and see myself here and the desks there. That was enough to bring the whole thing up. Total disaster of fear and trembling. I began in this 5 minutes to disintegrate the farek, this experience of fear. So watching the stomach, okay, stomach is contracting, heart is beating like crazy, sweat is sweating, mouth is dry, memory is telling me about all the times before of being afraid. Pattern or habit is controlling me. Imagination is supplying the reason to be afraid, imagining the people watching me, etc. All of that in one package. As soon as I could begin to disintegrate this package, everything became possible again. Because the contraction of the stomach was just contraction of the stomach. That's all. It's no big deal. The beating of the heart is beating the heart. So it beats. There's no big deal. The memory is just memory. No big deal. So part of what we can do in Vipassana is take an experience to pieces. And it's very, very useful, especially with physical pain. Because in physical pain, but also actually, no, it's also as much emotional pain. Physical and emotional pain, it always seems very strong. It always seems to be a thing. It always seems to be solid. There is the problem, and here is me, the victim, ha kurban. And the two are locked in a relationship. As soon as we begin to close the gap and begin to see, okay, what actually is going on? Let me see inside. What is this pain? It collapses the gap. The minute your interest really penetrates, really goes inside any phenomena, the gap is closed. You're looking into it, you're taking it to pieces, it becomes full of life. It becomes full of interest. It's a story, it shows itself, it reveals itself, like a pain reveals itself to be full of life and full of action and full of movement and full of different kinds of the sensations, hot and cold and pressure and movement and now it stops, now it starts, now it's this, now it's that, it's busy. And when you see this, you're participating in a big movie, actually. It's a big movie going on. And the more closer you get to it, the bigger the screen of the movie. It's interesting. And then it's no longer a thing that can dominate your experience, your life. It's not a thing that is a problem and you're a victim of it. So this breaking things to pieces, this intimacy with the issue is another part of Vipassana, and it really helps to solve the problems that come up for you in your, remember, it's your biography. It's our life story. It's not the mikre. It's a life story. But the other thing, and I think the main way that actually we can come out of, we can use Vipassana to actually come out of problems, is a deep understanding that we don't need to get rid of anything. And the reason is that things get rid of themselves. All we have to do is watch things getting rid of themselves. I'll give you an example, a story. I told it today to my group, one of the groups. Zen story. A student comes to the teacher and says, I have lots of anger. Can you please help me to deal with my anger? And the teacher says, okay, so bring me the anger and together we'll deal with it. So the student says, well, at this moment I don't have the anger. At this very moment. So the teacher says, well, okay then, so go back home to your cell, your monk's cell, and the next time you have anger, so bring it to me and we'll deal with it together. So the student says, well, yes, but master, you know that it takes me 10 minutes to get from my house to your room. And in the 10 minutes, definitely my anger will have gone. So the teacher says, look, even if you want the anger, when you want it, it's not there. You've already dealt with it, because the anger comes and goes when it wants. Not when you want it. It's not yours anyway. It's just coming and going because of conditions. It's not yours. Conditions make anger and then they change and it goes away. So everything comes and goes. And if you look carefully enough at everything, it will have the same thing. There'll be anger and the next minute the gong will come. Ah! gone. Where's anger? Where's stress? Where's pain in the back? What happened? It went by itself. Something else took its place. So it's not ours anyway. It's the result of a group of conditions creating a result called an issue, a problem, an anger, a fear, a joy, a bilbo, an experience of nothing happening, a depression, a high, a low. They come and they go. They're like birds in the sky. This is the truth of things. We don't have to ask anything to go. The most deep-seated problems, you know, deep sankharas. They come and they go. It's just that they keep coming back. It's true. They have a tendency to be very sticky. The deeper the sankharas, the more sticky they are. But they have the same basic nature of things that come and go. And if we just stay as a witness, a witness to the way things by themselves come and go, we're free. We are free because that's the truth, that things are like that. We don't have to push things away, because if we look carefully enough, everything by itself comes and goes. We just have to notice. Now there's a headache, now it's gone. Do we experience the not headache? If we experience the not headache, then we change our relationship to the headache. If we experience the no anger, our relationship to anger is changed. If we experience the no pain, even inside the pain, even in the middle of pain, there are places of no pain. If we experience the no pain in the pain, our relationship to pain has changed. So that's another aspect of vipassana. It's the aspect almost therapeutic in a way, in a sense of karma. Medicine for our karma. Medicine for things that are stuck in us. We just see their true nature. In relation to what we're doing here, in relation to our experience here, again, don't demand that you experience certain things. I don't think it's useful to demand from life that it gives you this experience or another experience. So in the retreat, just because I'm talking of anger, don't say, oh, I have no anger. The teachers say I have to experience anger and I don't have experience of anger, so I've failed again. Everything is a subject of vipassana. That means the anger, but also the tree in front of my eyes, the taste of the food, the peace, the nothing is happening at all to me, which is not true, but that's an experience too. Anything. So my suggestion, and we'll talk about this tomorrow perhaps more in the instructions and so on, but to do the work of meditation as we know it, quiet, steady, breathing in, breathing out, body sensations, being steady, being aware, and surrendering. That means allowing what is going to come to come. Not designing our experience, but allowing it. And regarding everything that turns up in this quiet space as a guest, orech, coming, a guest, to which we can apply clear seeing, vipassana. And as we peel off issues, as we watch the things come up and go, and they may come 100 times. Once someone asked Joseph, what do I do with self-judgment? And Joseph said, well, if just recognize it, after the 1,000th time that you judge yourself, you'll get so tired of it, it'll go forever. So this is not an instant process. You may not solve your problems in one retreat or two. It doesn't matter, because what is happening with Vipassana is a peeling off, is a letting go of issues, of layers, bit by bit. And a lot of that is a lot of our work. Because when we peel off the layers, there is kind of light underneath. It's that the light is held by the layers, the klipot. If we peel off the layers, we don't have to worry about light coming through us. But all we can need to do is just peel off layers as they come, and by itself, freedom, more freedom. We are more light. We are more free. We are less attached. We are less closed. We feel less in a prison of our biography, of our story, of all these layers. Awful place to do it. In this particular place called Ein Dor. And I discovered the reason why we're here. Here and nowhere else in the world right now. Written by a Christian monk called Reverend Hiero Monk Siluan, who used to be, I think, a Buddhist and is now a Greek Orthodox priest and lives in England. Yes, I believe so. Yeah. And he writes, I have to say that in the Christian tradition, clear seeing is called theoria, comes from the Greek. Our practice is the practice of theoria, of seeing, of contemplative knowing. And he says, who tells us to do this? Mount Tabor. Right here. Where is it? There. Next to us. It says, Tabor's injunction, meaning command, the command of Mount Tabor is to practice seeing. Here it is. So, we have no choice. The heart turns and sees who sees. The eye of the heart awakens. The mind enters the seeing of the heart. The eye of the heart by which we see God is the eye of God within us, by which God sees us. In this seeing, we are seen. We know as we are known. Mount Tabor is the holy mountain of illumination, of being lit up. And we go up now with enlightening seeing as our practice. There we go. So, no choice. Nothing, no choice. We have to do it. So let's sit quietly for a few minutes.